You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is
Ashley Farley.
Thanks for tuning into Author Stories. We've got a great show lined up for you today. Be sure to go to HankGarner.com and subscribe to the show. No matter how you listen, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Pandora, Spotify, or YouTube, you can subscribe to the show and never miss an episode. I'd like to thank some sponsors today. Scribophile is a respectful online writing workshop and writers community. Writers of all skill levels join to improve each other's work with thoughtful critiques and by sharing their writing experiences. We're the writing group to join if you want to find beta readers, get the best feedback around, learn how to get published, and be a part of the friendliest and most successful writing workshop online. Improve your writing by receiving detailed critiques. Learn from a vast collection of free writing resources. Make lifelong friends in our busy community of writers. Writing is a solitary art, but that doesn't mean you have to be lonely. Lucky for you, there are thousands of writers on Scribophile every day, and we're a really friendly bunch. You've never seen a writing group like this one. Join Scribophile today at scribophile.community. Business Essentials for Writers: How to Make Money in an Ever-Changing Industry by James Nettles. Business Essentials for Authors is your business 101 guide for the publishing industry. Whether you've never published at all or are looking to take your professional career up a notch in an easy-to-read and conversational way, the book covers the five pillars of business. We look at all of this and more from a long-term strategic view, how to get the plan done, and the mindset to make it all work. Business Essentials for Writers: How to Make Money in an Ever-Changing Industry by James Nettles. Both Sides of the Law, the Casper Halliday NYPD series, book one by Nathan Roden. He shared his father's dream of becoming a detective. A prison sentence was not part of his plan. Casper Halliday's dream began to unravel 2 months before his 16th birthday. His father, Bobby, resigned from the NYPD after 15 years without an explanation. Casper's parents fought. Sirens closed in on their home from every direction. The sound that had always been a source of comfort now brought only humiliation. Bobby Halliday moved out. Casper's dream dissolved into a daily fight for survival. All he wanted now was to finish high school so he could ease his mother's burden. On his 17th birthday, in the throes of depression, Casper made a bad decision. That decision brought him face to face with one of the most dangerous men in the city. In Casper's world, there is laughter and there are tears. There's light and there's bitter darkness. There are improbable friends and unspeakable enemies. The Casper Halliday NYPD series launches with the most unlikely of beginnings. Read Both Sides of the Law today. The ebook edition includes a sneak peek of Ghost Man, book two in the series. For the Words is a unique writing motivator unlike anything I've seen. For the Words is an online writing platform which motivates writers of all backgrounds to increase their word count through gamification. Writing can be challenging, especially when you need to consistently produce a high output of words. By injecting a little fun into the routine and using daily rewards to promote a healthy writing habit, For the Words makes it easier to reach that word count. We're a community of bloggers, professional authors, college and high school students, research scientists, gamers, and first-time writers from all over the world. Come for the words, stay for the fun. Go to thewords.com. Writers, the internet is one of the best tools for research and creativity. It can also be one of the biggest hindrances to productivity, distracting you from doing the seat-in-the-chair, hand-on-keyboard work. Rescue Time gives you an accurate picture of how you spend your time to help you become more productive every single day. Spot inefficiencies in your day and become better at managing your time. Create a goal like spending less than 1 hour per day on email to help you stay focused. Set an alarm to tell you when you spent more than 2 hours on Facebook. Try Rescue Time and use our special discount code for 30% off a Rescue Time premium account by going to rescuetime.com/authorstories. Let us help you rescue your time. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Ashley Farley on the show with me today. She has a fantastic new book. I'm holding it in my hand right now, this gorgeous paperback. It's called Only One Life, and this book is available everywhere right now in paperback, Kindle edition, audiobook edition. And brought to you by Lake Union Publishers. We love Lake Union and all that they're doing out there with authors and readers. Welcome to the show, Ashley.
Thank you so much for having me, Hank. I'm happy to be here.
I'm excited to have you. Ashley, we begin each show with the same question. And that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
Oh, my first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller. I don't know. You know, I think I've always been an avid reader and an avid daydreamer. But I can't say that there was one moment my writing career sort of evolved, if you will. I lost my brother in 1999 to a drug overdose, and I was trying to sort of, you know, just cope with my grief. It was really hard. And so I started writing, and it helped. I'm one of those people that keeps things bottled up inside. And I just needed to release it. And I thought I would try to write a memoir, but that felt like I was betraying his memory in some way. And so I wrote Saving Ben instead, which is a work of fiction about a brother and sister during their college days, which is, you know, during the time my brother and I were the closest. So I won't say that I had one light bulb moment that, hey, I'm going to be a writer. It came about in a different way.
I love that. I love that you described yourself as a reader and daydreamer, because I think that's really the core of where the storytelling experience comes from, is the ability to use your imagination just by yourself, with yourself, and then wanting to share those things outwardly with other people. I think a lot of people don't really pinpoint that daydreaming aspect early on as being important to the journey.
Yeah, it really is. And I didn't honestly think about that until a few years ago, but I thought back to my teenage years, I guess, or maybe more pre-adolescent, when I just spent a lot of time inside my head daydreaming and just creating stories. And I guess I just have always done that. You know, at night when I'm trying to go to sleep or whatever, I just assumed everybody did that, but maybe not. create stories. Go ahead.
On your website, you describe yourself as a writer-holic. When that started, through the grief of losing your brother, and I'm so sorry that you went through that. When the doors opened, was it just like the floodgate started once you started? Did you realize this was something you had been missing in your life, and it just kind of overtook you?
Absolutely. And I can't turn it off now. It just keeps coming and coming. But it also happened in a really good time for me. My children were in high school, and they were, you know, getting ready to go off to college. And in writing, I found something that belongs only to me, that I don't have to share it. Well, I mean, I do share it with my readers, but I'm in control of it. This thing is for me. This career is mine. And I just love that. And I was able to, I have a lot of energy and I have to get rid of it. And once my children were gone, I focused so much on them, you know, being a stay-at-home mom. But once they were gone, I had this other thing to focus on. And it's not just the writing, it's the marketing and the graphics, creating the graphics and all many, many, many different components of writing that keep me busy. And I love it. And I do it 24/7. And, yeah, it's been a huge blessing.
When you debated on whether to write memoir or to tell another story to help you deal with that grief and to try to you know, make sense of it all. How long did it take you to get that book out? And you said that it kind of clicked with you when you switched to writing fiction. How long did it take for that story to come all out?
I don't know, probably several years. At that time, it was really just a hobby. I was taking online classes at Gotham, you know, Writers Workshop. I don't know if you're familiar with that platform, but they took every class they offered. I just kept writing for enjoyment and a hobby. And then I wrote this fiction, Saving Ben, and I got it as far as I possibly could. And then I found an editor who is still my editor today. She's retired from Random House and she's wonderful. And then I had a cover designed and then I was a closet writer at the time. My mother didn't know I was writing. My husband did, but you know, and so before I put it up on Amazon, I had that proof copy from of the paperback. I sent it to my mother and I said, please read this. I need for you to sign off on it before I can do anything with it. And, you know, she didn't even know I was writing. So she was surprised. But I'm not sure that I answered your question. So several years.
That story, I think, resonates with a lot of people. There are some very personal stories that we tell that to the world at large may not, you know, realize that story is connected to anything. Saving Ben obviously was a very personal story to you. What was your family's reaction to that?
Well, my mother was just very touched. My father's not alive. My brother doesn't read fiction, so she was just very touched. And she, you know, she's responsible for my love of reading. She always has a book in her hand, and she's the first one that I always send my books to. And you know, she's just very supportive of it. But she was touched, I think. And you know, then I switched to women's fiction, which is more in line with what I like to read. I consider Saving Ben more a new adult book.
Sure. When you switched to women's fiction, was that when you began the Sweeney Sisters?
Yes, series? It was. Well, that's when I moved to, I'm originally from South Carolina, from coastal South Carolina, and I was down there visiting my family one August, and I just miss it so much. I love Richmond, Virginia, which is where I live now, but I miss the Low Country so much, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to write about the Low Country. Why not? I can go there in my mind every day, and I want to write about, I have five sisters-in-law, but I've never had a sister. I've always wanted one, so you know, that's the beauty of fiction is you can create what you want.
Exactly.
And so then I decided to write Her Sister's Shoes. And it was just, I loved it. I had enjoyed every minute of it. And that book probably took me a couple of years. I was still dealing with children and had some volunteer commitments. But then once that took off for me, I just turned to writing full time and they just kept coming.
That's awesome. You self-published that first book, Saving Ben. Did you have a good experience with that? And was that the path you pursued with Sweeney Sisters when you first started writing that?
Saving Ben, it was never very successful. It really never went anywhere. But I just kept writing because I enjoyed it, and I wanted to try something different. And then I published Her Sister's Shoes in June, and I was fortunate to get not much success, but I was able to get a BookBub promotion at the end of August, and I gave it away, you know, for free, and it did really well. I had, you know, I don't know, 5,000 downloads or whatever. But then a couple weeks later, I wasn't watching sales, but I happened just to check my sales and it was selling like crazy. I was like, I told my husband, oh my gosh, people were actually buying this book. And I was so excited. And then it went to, you know, 200 or something on Amazon. And, you know, it just, you know, my success just sort of started from there.
That's awesome. Do you attribute that back to the BookBub and just kind of raising awareness for the book?
Absolutely.
A lot of people can't wrap their head around the fact that giving something away can then turn into sales. did you hear from begin to hear from readers and start getting some feedback?
Yes, I did. Absolutely, I did. And then things just sort of took off. I at that time I had started another Mary, in the Adventures of Scotty series, and so I wrote two little books before I went back to the Sweeney sisters. But by that time, you know, the Sweeney's, the Her Sister She Said really gained some popularity. For months, it was doing well on Amazon. So then I turned my attention back to the Sweeney's, and I wrote, you know, four sequels. The women just resonate. The characters really resonate with readers. I think because they can relate to them. They're very normal people. They have normal relationships with their family within the Sweeney's. They love each other. And, you know, that just the whole series has been very successful. So I've been blessed.
You said that you write books about women for women. What are some of the key themes or topics that resonate most deeply with you and that you like to communicate?
So, you know, just family love and forgiveness, and, you know, we're all human and we all make mistakes and we all have to look past that and forgive each other and be there to support each other in trying times, because we all have them, and illness and death. And, you know, I try to be more uplifting than that, honestly, Hank, but, you know, sometimes people do die in my books. It's sad. But that kind of just that family love that you just, you know, I don't know, that a lot of people are missing, sadly.
Right. After that initial book bub and then sales started taking off, how long did it take before you considered yourself to have found success? Like, at what point did you feel like, okay, I'm connecting with the audience, and did you start getting feedback and it really felt like that people were connecting with what you were doing?
Right. Well, I mean, I think when Her Sister Shoe started doing so well during the months that it was selling so well, that's when, you know, I immediately felt like people, you know, if one person read my book and liked it, I felt like a success. So it's how you, it depends on how you measure it. But, and again, I had turned my attention to a different little series, and I'm like, I need to, you know, grab hold of this opportunity with the Sweeney's and go with it. And I did. And then I started getting offers from, you know, Lake Union and Kindle Press. And Kindle Press, I'm sad that they're not around anymore, because I really enjoy some of the success with them. They took Sweet Tea Tuesdays and Magnolia Night. Sweet Tea Tuesdays was on the Amazon charts for 2 weeks, which was really exciting. And then Magnolia Night. So,
awesome.
It's been great. It's been a very fun journey, and it's not over. So who knows what's around the corner.
Right. How many books are there in the Sweeney Sister series?
There are 5 in the series, and they're Home for Wounded Hearts, which is technically a standalone. I intended it to be a standalone, but it does kind of continue. It's one sister's story that continues. Gotcha. Faith's story, but it's a standalone. If you don't have to have read the whole series to figure out what's going on.
Gotcha. Well, the new book is called Only One Life, and it is with Lake Union. How did this book start for you?
With the simple premise of a strange daughter finding her way home. And, you know, it was fun. That book, that was just the idea I had. And then I thought, you know, I want to go a little deeper into the Low Country. I wasn't growing tired of Charleston, but I felt like I needed a little bit of a change. So my husband and I did a research trip to Beaufort, South Carolina. I hadn't been there in years, since I was a child. And I fell in love with that place. It's sleepy, and the trees are incredible, the live oaks and the marsh views. And so really, that's when it's Pat Conroy's home, which I'm a big fan of Pat Conroy. So the story just sort of took off from there, and just a general idea. Things had to be very destitute for Julia to need to go home. But then the fun part was when I started writing her mother's story, Iris's story. I just intended to write a couple of chapters to bring the readers to speed on, you know, her past. But once I got going, and then Iris introduced me to Lily, and then this whole world opened up. And before I knew it, I had written a whole other mini book. So I had to, but it's a huge part of the novel.
Well, what's fun about writing a long running series like with the Sweeney sisters, and whether that's five or six books, depending on how you look at that, it's easier to jump into a new story sometimes because you have a lot of the ground rules already set, and you don't have to explain everything to readers all over again. You already have fully formed characters in a lot of places, and you can just the story just kind of comes alive and kind of, you know, hits the ground running, so to speak. But then when you start a new story with all new characters, new setting and all that, there's also a certain excitement to the undiscovered aspects of it. How was it switching gears over to this completely new setting, new people, and all of that? How long does it take you to really find the story and to get off and running?
Yeah, I know. I totally agree with what you're saying, but at the same time, I think I struggle a lot when I'm writing a series, if I'm writing a sequel, with how much you have to bring the reader to speed to a certain extent in the beginning, because they've read, you know, however many, 25 more books since they've read your last book, and you need to sort of remind them, but it's hard to know how much so I kind of struggle with that. I would dump a whole bunch of backstory in, and my editor would cut it all out. But
like, no, this is for my benefit too.
Yeah, exactly. To answer your question, it's exciting for me to start somewhere fresh and start somewhere new. And yes, I do probably write a lot in the beginning that ends up getting cut out. But you know, you just there are the things I do with my characters to get to know them. Like I have questionnaires that I fill out just about their taste and their hobbies and things like that that sort of help me get to know the character. And then sometimes you just write a couple of chapters and you look at it and say, oh, this is backstory, it's not necessary. But you just have to write it anyway, just to get it out of your head. It's part of the getting to know your characters process. So my daughter just moved to New Orleans, and I've never been to New Orleans, and I can't wait to go visit her because I'm hoping to set like a new project in New Orleans soon. So we'll see how that'll go.
Oh, that's a great city and full of potential. Let me just tell you, you're gonna love it. When you start thinking about a new story and start thinking about these new characters, what comes to you first? And Only One Life really deals with some big themes. There's kind of misplaced trust, and there's the mother-daughter relationship, and then how that works in the greater family, and, coming of age and what that means for the daughter and for the mother. You know, when as parents, we're watching our kids come, come of age, and then how much do we, how much do we play into that? How much do we stand back and let things happen? You know, there's a lot of big themes happening in this book.
Yes.
When you start thinking about a new book, what comes to you first? Is it a character? Is it a scenario? Is it one of these big themes? Is it the setting? How does it usually start to take form for you?
It usually just starts with one idea. And like I said, with this one, it was just the estranged daughter, and I wanted her, to go home, to find her way home. And I literally just do usually create one character, throw her into a situation, and let her show me the way. And honestly, I'm not a plotter by any means. I just take it chapter at a time, and things just evolve for me. I like to say I give life to my characters and let them show me the way. And that's what happens. Before I know it, I have a whole book. And you know, along the lines, I'm all constantly trying to think of, okay, what can I do to make my reader keep reading? What can happen to this character to make it more exciting, make the reader turn the pages more? So that's always in the forefront of my mind. If I'm bored writing a scene, then I know my reader's going to be bored reading it. And that's a huge telltale indicator for me. I don't have any, and my agent has just made me write up a synopsis. And I say made because it was torture to write a book proposal, a synopsis with beginning to end. And that is not the way I work. And like, I can't, I mean, I just don't, I'm sure that by the time I may have an idea in mind of where I want something to go, but 9 times out of 10, my characters will say, no, it's not happening that way. It's happening this way. And I have never started a book and known how it's going to end. Even Saving Ben, when I got to the very last scene, I said, oh, I thought I had it all figured out. And I said, no, this makes so much more sense. That's just the way, I do it. People are different.
I think a lot of people are like you, and you know, the weird thing is that most people have a kind of a hybrid method of writing, and the reality of plotters and pantsers, a lot of times it's somewhere in the middle. Very mm-hmm. few people are solidly one or the other, and by my count, and tell me if I've got this wrong, Only One Life is that book number 14 for you?
That's correct. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And in writing these 14 novels, and you know, starting with that original premise and that character, and then letting them reveal the story to you, after doing this 14 times, has your writing process evolved? Do you still approach novel writing the same as you did in the beginning? Like, what things have changed for you in that 14 novels?
Not really. I mean, my process hasn't changed that much. You know, it's gotten easier, and it's things are clearer to me. I know when things are right and when things are wrong sometimes, but I like to swim. I swim every day, or at least 4 times a week laps. And, you know, if you've ever been a swimmer, you know how boring it is, but that is when my best plotting takes place. And I swam this morning, and it's clear to me in the pool. I can just think through so many things. And by the time I sit down at the computer, a lot of times I have a whole chapter, you know, sort of outlined in my head. So I do go chapter by chapter. And this morning I was swimming. I said, all right, look at big picture stuff, Ashley. Where do you want to go in the next few chapters? I've been out of the country, so I'm just now getting back to my project. That's what I do. I do 3 drafts. My first draft is just get it out of my head onto the computer. Everything really comes together in the second draft. That's when things really begin to make sense. And big changes happen. And then the third draft is a listen draft, where I get my computer to read it back to me. And that really helps so much, just hearing it. A lot of people will read it to themselves, but I hate my voice, so I'd rather just read it.
It's a lot of work to read it to yourself, too.
It is. This is awesome.
But if you can, and you can act out the different characters, it's an amazing experience. But you will be.
I bet.
Yeah. It lets you help, you know, test dialogue and stuff like that. It's not for everybody, but it can be an eye-opening experience for sure. In your second draft, where you say that things really come together, does the story change much in there? Do you ever spot things and go, oh my goodness, I now see where this character wants to go? Is that a changing draft, or is it just more of a polishing?
Sometimes it can be. It really just depends. I don't really know how to, I can't think of an example right now to give you, but sometimes, well, with Only One Life, this wasn't really my second draft, but I had had a Iris Julia chapter all the way through. And then when I turned it into my publisher, she said, you know what, I think you need to clump all those Iris facts, you know, the old chapters from the 70s and 80s together. And it's a little bit of a different formatted novel, but I think it works to have that whole story laid out all at once. But yeah, so there are always changes, always.
Gotcha. Speaking of your time swimming and using that to kind of work out story problems or just, you know, planning in your head, a friend of mine called me this morning and he was driving and he said, oh, I had this great idea and I just need to tell it to someone so I don't forget it. He said, it's always when I'm driving and I can't do anything about it. And I think that happens to a lot of people. It's when you get your mind off the story and you're doing something else and your body's, you know, busy doing something else, then the creativity can flow. Is that something you utilize on a regular basis to just kind of put yourself in the position, okay, I'm going to do something else and just let my mind work on what it needs to work on?
Absolutely. I mean, even if it's just getting up from my computer and going down and going to fold a load of laundry, something simple as that, sometimes you just have to get up and move, right. Walk around the block, just do something, go to the grocery store. But because you've left your computer and you're no longer working on it, the characters are still there. They're still talking to you. They're still in your head. At least for me, they never go away. At night, it's really fun when you wake up in the middle of the night and the characters are knocking, tap, tap, tap. It's like I'm talking to you and I have to get it out. I'll reach for my phone, which I probably shouldn't, but I keep it beside my bed and just start typing into my little notes app because I'll wake up in the next morning and it will be gone and I will completely forgotten what I was thinking about. And I've written whole chapters at night. Yeah. And okay, I wake up the next morning and it's like, oh, this is awesome material.
you talked about writing scenes. You use the term scene a lot. Do you have a certain structure for scenes? Does a scene for you, does it need to accomplish something specific? And is a scene a chapter for you? Are there multiple scenes in a chapter? How do you think about that, and how do you approach the element of scenes in your writing process?
Typically, a chapter for me is multiple scenes, and it sometimes can be frustrating because it's hard to get the characters from one scene to another. Oftentimes, that transition can be a bit of a challenge, but yes, because the scenes have to have a purpose. Otherwise it's pointless. I think of what I want to happen and then create the scene, to support that action, if you will.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Do you, because you are discovering the story as you write, as you get closer to the end, do you start seeing the end and does the ending reveal itself to you so that you know kind of how the book is going to wrap up and what emotional points maybe still need to be addressed?
Yeah, I mean, as I'm nearing the end, as I am right now with this, my work in progress that I was thinking about this morning while I was swimming. I'm like, okay, I kind of need to think about, I can feel myself sort of getting towards the end. And I think about how I need to get there and what needs to happen for me to get there. But then sometimes I'll get right to the end and then I'll have a completely different ending. So, you know, I literally do go one chapter at a time. In this case, it's alternating points of view of three characters, so they have to kind of all come together.
That's another thing I wanted to ask you, because the book is written in third person, so that you can head hop, so to speak, and get different points of view from characters. Have you ever written a book in first person?
You know, my first drafts of, you know, I forgot about this book that I had worked on a lot while I was in Gotham. I wrote it in every which way you could possibly imagine. And that book I ditched it a long time ago, but I didn't, first person doesn't work as well for me as third person. It's not because I don't want to, though. I am tempted to try it. I don't know. You have to be so close to the character.
Well, and it's so limiting. If you have more than one character that you're really trying to develop, it's a real challenge because you can't get inside their head. You're having to show everything from someone else's point of view, and it becomes more difficult.
Exactly.
Well, I love the new book. Only One Life is out, available everywhere now. Ashley, I really love everything that you're doing. If people are just discovering you and want to find out more about the work that you do, dig into your back catalog, follow along with some news, is there a place where they can find you online to learn more about you?
Oh, well, certainly. My website, ashleyfarley.com, ashleyfarley.com, had all of my books are discoverable there. I spend most time, most of my social media time on Facebook, on my author page. It's Ashley W. Farley. We have a really good time on my Facebook page. I'm having a giveaway right now. Today's my birthday. I'm 55.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I have a $55 Amazon gift card.
Nice.
I do a big launch parties for every book off my Facebook page. They're fun. They're themed. It's a whole day of just lots of giveaways. That's the best part of my job is giveaways. So that would be Facebook, I would say, would be the best place to connect. And I love connecting with readers.
Excellent. I'm going to put links to all that in the show notes of this episode. Ashley, when someone finishes one of your books, Only One Life is the new one. Like we said, it's out available now. There's 13 others in your back catalog. What do you hope people are left with in the end when they close that back cover and they finished an Ashley Farley book? What do you hope stays with them?
I've read many of books. Where the Crawdads Sing is the most recent book that I've read that just stays with me for a while. Just the characters and, you feel like the whole story they've just made an impact on you. It's difficult to describe, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes part of you in a weird way.
And you're sad that it's over and you want more and, that's what I want. I want my readers to keep reading well into the night, and I want my characters and my story and my messages to stay with them long after they finish reading. That's a big goal. I'm not sure I've achieved it, but that's what I aim to achieve.
Well, you're doing fantastic work, Ashley.
Thank you.
I said everybody to pick up their copy of Only One Life. Happy birthday and happy launching of the latest book. We wish you continued success.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Author Stories. Go to hankgarner.com to find all of the archives of the show and be sure to subscribe while you're there. Now stay tuned for a special audiobook clip from Richard Gleaves, the Jason Crane series.
I'm melting! I'm melting!
Cried Joey.
Take the picture already!
He stood with one arm around the bronze waist of the bewitched tribute statue, Samantha Stevens, riding a broom across a crescent moon. Jason tried in vain to frame the shot without any tourists in it, but that was impossible. From all points of the compass, a merry horde had arrived for Salem's two-day summer psychic fair. All the commuter trains had burst open, like cornucopias filled beyond capacity, spilling endless fruits and nuts onto the red brick sidewalks of Essex Street. A vampirist in lavender shorts and feathered boots sold maple chocolate walnut fudge in front of the Witch City Tattoo Parlor. A near-naked gypsy in purple-green veils danced with a pheasant in her arms around a plug-in Hanukkah menorah. A fat man in a fetching blue jeans dress sold amethyst and citrine charm bracelets in front of Medusa Cafe, but his stand got knocked over by a one-armed crone driving a mobility scooter who sang choo-choo as she passed, her stump on the wheel, her lipstick ghastly, her gnarled right hand raised in trailing plumes of noxious cigarette smoke. Chewbacca leapt out of her way and slapped sparks from his fur. He gave a disgruntled growl before going back to playing Summer Lovin' on his ukulele. The old one-armed dervish drove off,
choo-choo,
parting a crowd of wanderers, slack-jawed tourists with camera straps tight across their bellies, yellow-vested police on segways, elderly rollerbladers, face-painted infants and harried parents, and college girls. So many hot, hysterical college girls that you'd think somebody had napalmed a sorority house.
Jason, are you deaf?
Sorry. Jason raised the phone and took the shot. Joey inspected the photo and nodded in approval.
Your turn.
No, thanks.
Do it, Shaggy. Don't make me hex you.
Jason gave in and traded places. He put an arm around Samantha's metal back. Her bronze body had flushed in the afternoon sun, warm through his glove, but her eyes were weary. No, downright creepy. And her smile was forced, like a Disneyland princess who'd had her toe stomped.
Say chowder,
cried Joey, who'd been practicing his New England accent all morning.
Come on, man. Say chowder.
Fine, chowder. Joey got the shot, and Jason surrendered Samantha to a chubby kid wearing a Gandalf beard who climbed up to worship her bronze bosom.